Welcome to the program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Happy Saturday, folks. It's good to be here. I got to tell you. So, my update. Okay, so this week, spent a little bit of time up in Utah. Ski vacation. My kids, so I have three kids, my 8-year-old and my 5-year-old are now officially more proficient skiers than I am, which is, well, part of it's a function that kids, you know, kids when they're skiing, they don't have that far to fall. So they take more risks, you know? And when you take risks, when you risk falling, well, you are much more likely to have a steeper, you know, learning curve. I can't risk falling. You know, I fall, it's over. I wear a helmet because, you know, I'm not a Kennedy, so I don't ski backwards with my video camera. People do really dumb shiz out there on the slopes. I'll tell you that. I mean, really dumb stuff and grownups. I don't know. People text while they're skiing downhill. So I think, you know, I understand you're not supposed to text and drive, although, you know, I mean, I don't, right? But producer Robbie, you know, when I'm trying to reach him about something, you know, he knows he has to drop everything. not his pants. Okay, we draw the line there. So, yeah, but I saw this guy texting, and then I love the guys that have the Bluetooth, you know, headset in their ear, and they're on a phone call. You're skiing. This is a zen moment. You know, you got the wind in your hair, it's beautiful outside, it's cool, and you're talking to your stockbroker. I don't get it. So, okay, so all that, kids did really well. There was one point where my daughter just, I'm skiing behind her maybe 20 feet, and she just goes right off the end of a run and just into trees and out of sight down the slope, and Sherry and I thought, I mean, that was the last time we were going to see her. So we get to her. Everything's fine. Now she talks about it as the highlight of the whole trip. So go figure. One thing I'll tell you, Rob, is for some reason when I travel, I have the wildest dreams. And since this show is part therapy for me, I might as well kind of lay this out there. So I had this. Well, one of the dreams, I don't know what to say. Again, I'll just lay the dream out there and we can analyze it. So one of these dreams I had was that I was driving and I get to a DUI checkpoint. And this DUI checkpoint, they didn't have the standard, you know, the light in the face and the, you know, how many fingers am I holding type of thing. Have you been drinking tonight and all that jazz? Instead, they had off to the side a little obstacle course with some cones. And the way you pass the DUI checkpoint in my dream is you are, if directed, and I was singled out. They thought I was driving drunk, which of course I never do. And I got singled out and they told me to go over here. And the object was if you pass through the obstacle course without hitting any cones, you're not drunk. So when I woke up from this dream, I thought, this is a flash of brilliance. I mean, forget having people walk on the line, you know, just direct them with their car off to the side and make them go through an obstacle course. I ran this by some friends and they thought, they weren't quite sure what it says, right? What that says about me. Maybe Robbie's got some ideas. I'm sure he's chuckling over there. But yeah, so crazy dream. And maybe it's the altitude, but So there it is. Crazy dreams always. And I don't know. It's always when I'm on the road and I've got all these, you know, new experiences going on. What else can I tell you about Utah? Beautiful. It was hot there too. It's been warm here. It was like 50 degrees and the snow is melting. So then you start to ski on slush and that only gets you so far. I'm a bad skier, but I'm a little bit better now. And that's it. Now, the other dream that I had, I'll tell you, Robbie, you'll love this because you know the office. Now, we don't have any windows that are operable There are no operable windows, but I had this dream that I walked into my office and there was a guy hanging out of my window and he's throwing purses and wallets that he had stolen from a bunch of people in the office and he's throwing them down to his little gypsy family that's down below and they're just catching it like it's, you know, like it's Christmas time. Like it's the great Bernie Sanders giveaway, you know, a little wallet toss. And I run into the room and I did the only thing. I stopped and I said, what am I going to do? And I decided that I was just going to throw him out the window. And that was my first defenestration dream, right? I think that's the technical term of throwing someone out of a window. So I threw this guy like legs first. He's begging me not to. I'm holding his legs and mercilessly I throw him out the window, which I figured out, Robbie, what spurned this on. And what spurns this on is it was spurned this on was this news story. And this was late last week, I think, was a guy. Did you hear about this, Rob? The guy that goes to sell some very expensive sneakers. And I don't know anything about sneakers. I buy like one pair of tennis shoes every 3 years and that's it. But apparently there's some really fancy sneakers out there. I don't know if they're like Yeezy, you know, designs them or whatever the story is. There's some fancy, fancy shoes. And so this guy advertises on Craigslist that he's selling these shoes. Which I'm telling you, if I was selling sneakers on Craigslist, I'd be going to a really public place. In fact, meet me at a police station. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to meet in the lobby of a police precinct. So this guy, instead of doing that, the seller... agrees to meet him on a street corner, which I think is just like a no-go. That's Darwinism right there, just whatever. So the guy meets him on a street corner, and what's the next thing that happens? Well, he's a teenager. He puts a gun in the guy's face and steals the $400, $500 sneakers. And apparently the gun, he tries to actually shoot the guy, but the gun jams. And this happens a lot when you buy these guns off the street, you know, whatever, made in Guatemala special. So thankfully, the gun jams. So next step, the guy that gets robbed starts driving away and he's got a moment that I'm sure we'd all have, right? We'd think, what just happened? So he turns his van around. And he takes off after the kid who's running away. Well, he says he wanted to stop the kid, right? He wants to stop him for the cops. He wants to catch him. And he runs him over with his van, pins him up against a fence, and the kid, it severs his arm. And now you've got the kid. Now the kid, I tell you, one tough kid, he still is dead set on making his getaway, this time without his arm. So he is running down the street. This is something like out of a Quentin Tarantino movie. He's running down the street with no arm. Blood is, you know, everywhere. And then when he gets on a bus and people are pleading with him, they're like, listen, man, you got to go to a hospital. I mean, you got a problem. Left the arm behind. Police show up. Apparently, I read the other day, just the other day, that they were able to reattach the arm. But the big part of the story, folks, is the guy that goes to sell his shoes. He starts his day thinking, I'm going to be $450 richer today than I was yesterday. I'm going to get rid of these shoes that I'm not going to wear. And instead, where is he now? He's in a whole lot of trouble. Because he got charged with attempted murder. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the sentiment. Will he get convicted? That's a good question, Rob. So maybe, maybe not. The way murder works, there's got to be an intent, right? There has to be premeditation. And premeditation isn't what you hear about in the movies. It's not, folks, and this is important to note, right? It can be any kind of a forethought, planning, anything in your head that thinks about the act in advance of it happening, and it can be very brief. Meaning, you don't have to, you know how you read about these cases where the guy's planning the crime, you know, planning the crime, he's buying all this stuff for weeks before. It does not require weeks of preparation. So just a few minutes, well, in this case, seconds, right, is enough to qualify someone, you know, to qualify a manslaughter or an involuntary manslaughter charge up to murder. And it all has to do with that premeditation element. And so the real thing here is, what did he intend to do? Because they didn't charge him with, and maybe they did, they added some other charges. I didn't see that in the news story, but they didn't charge him with, you know, with mayhem or gross, you know, mayhem with gross bodily harm, or they didn't charge him with assault, you know, again with GBI. They didn't do any of that. They just went straight to attempted murder. And they'll do that. They'll charge somebody with the most serious charge and maybe tack on those other charges later. So in my dream, right, where I'm throwing the guy out of the window, that was not a smart idea because I had some premeditation. And because I was thinking about this case, what would you do? I mean, if somebody put a gun in your face, and that's what this guy's going to argue. His defense attorneys are going to argue heat of passion. And that's how you plead murder down to manslaughter. Heat of passion. Because in that moment, you got a guy who puts a gun in your face. He's still fairly close. Even though he's running away, he could still ostensibly shoot at you. You're angry. You're not thinking. So one side's saying he's not thinking enough, and the other side's saying he's thinking too much. But I promise you, no one in that community, there is not going to be one juror that isn't going to have a little bit of sympathy for this guy. So I think this is one tough case. So more after this, folks. Good to be back. Talk to you after this break. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I don't know. What happens when you drop the groundhog? That's a long-ass winter. I think that's what that is. It's a bad omen. I think, actually, New York had some really bad snow that year, and you guys have your mayor to blame for that one. And welcome back to the program. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And folks, if you and a loved one happen to be returning in the car, coming home from a Donald Trump rally, and you are high on life, you've just experienced a near messianic event, and there you are, everything's good, until wham, you're rear-ended by a guy in a Prius with a Bernie Sanders bumper sticker. There's really nothing worse, is there, Rob? Nothing worse. Actually, there is. And that's when you start talking to the guy's insurance company. And you realize that insurance company, that agent there, that those people, they're not on your side. And they are trying to nickel and dime you. And they're not going to be there to make sure that you heal and that you get the compensation that you deserve. There's one person to call, and that is sweet James Bergener. Now, I'll tell you, folks, when you are in an accident or a loved one has an injury, you need to find the right lawyer. And the right lawyer is someone who listens and someone who gives you strong advice and protects you and takes you through this process of getting a claim done. And it's not straightforward. It's not easy. Insurance companies don't like to hand out money. They don't. They're good at collecting premiums, but they're very bad at compensating injury victims. And that's where Sweet James and his team come into action. And they will go to work for you. Give them a call today. Really approachable, easy to talk to. Lots of good people there. Sweet James and his team. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or go to sweetjames.com. All right. Robbie, speaking of bumper stickers It's really funny how there are not very many bumper stickers out there yet. Oddly, maybe it's because of karma for me. I mean, somebody's trying to antagonize me. I see nothing but Bernie Sanders stickers. Is that, do you have you found that? No? Oh, they're free. Well, there you go. yeah, Trump, his stickers are still waiting. Mexico's owing, has to pay for them first, right? So Mexico's going to be paying for the Trump stickers. I don't know. There's so many cars with, could there be, Robbie, so many lost idiots out there who really are going to vote for him? Is that really what's going on? I'm telling you, they're lost. It's a far away from Vermont, but they're California license plates. I don't know. Let's go through some Bernie facts, folks. Let your Uncle Sam here tell you a few things about this guy. Okay. I think when I look at the presidency, let's take ideology out of it for a minute. Separate that out. Because clearly a guy like Obama has a different ideology from a guy like Bush. Bush has a different ideology than Clinton. Ideology comes and goes, okay? That's one part of the equation. Another part of the equation I think that's you know, it's really important is competence. Because you're an executive, right, in the sense that you're managing and leading people, of an enormous organization. An enormous organization. There's nothing really that can prepare you for the presidency, right? There, I mean, there's no lateral move into the presidency is what I'm getting at. You know, no job is like the presidency. But typically, presidents who have been effective, and now, you know, I'm not talking about effective as far as, you know, who you think have done a good job, but presidents who are effective at advancing their agenda are ones who have experience in executive leadership roles. It is said, and I agree with it personally, that governors, for example, that's a good proving ground. You're not running the country, you're running a state. And as long as that state, you know, isn't Vermont, you actually have some experience running a big organization, managing people, balancing a budget. Well, we'll get to that. I don't think Bernie really has that in the cards. We'll get to that. But the point is you've got to know how to lead people. And so the argument is, if you've got somebody who isn't in government, who doesn't have political experience like Trump, well, at least he's run a big corporation, right? And he knows how to manage people. He knows how to delegate. He knows how to create layers of, you know, autonomous decision makers that report up a chain. Okay. So Bernie, folks, I get it. If you're a lost left-wing kook and you think Bernie is the answer to all that ails you and ails this country, I'm sorry, you're insane, but I get it. Where I'm going to tell you you've got a bit of a problem is that this guy, I don't think this guy can execute. This is the silver lining for me as a conservative, is that Bernie cannot execute. He'll be unable to execute most of his crazy fringe ideas that he's intending to put out there. And I think all we have to do is go to his resume, which is, for a sitting U.S. senator, paper thin. I have it here. Robbie, what would you say? Do you know how old Bernie was when he got his first job? Yeah, give me a guess. Well, Missy, you tell me. How old was he when he got his first paying job? What do you think? No, 25. Not even close. Not even close. I think he was 40. He was 40. Folks, I'm a fairly young guy still. I think of myself. I'm 35. At 21, I was fully independent. On my 22nd birthday, I remember I was I celebrated in my new apartment. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't get it. So let's just first start with the fact. I mean, what did he do? He freelanced for some leftist magazines, and I've got a picture from that era, folks. Robbie, we're going to have to post this up on samnation.com. Ladies, and some men, you will appreciate the fact that he looks like a cross between Adam Brody and Che Guevara. Right? What do you think, Missy? Missy's liking it. No. Lachey, what do you think? Can you see the Adam Brody? Yeah, come on. Oh, stop it. Robbie, show him that picture. The one thing is he's consistent, right? He's a consistent left-wing nut. He freelanced for some leftist magazines, and then he wrote some kind of crude stories. And what did he it says he got paid about $50 a piece per story. 10 cents a word is what I have here. Okay. Tried carpentry, but failed badly. So he's kind of like a left-wing Jesus, if I can say that. Then somewhere along the way, he has a child out of wedlock, he didn't. The child was not aborted. He's all for aborting all sorts of children, but apparently not this one. So he has a kid out of wedlock. And when he got married later, he lived in a shack with a dirt floor. So, yeah, and he's got that humble, like, you know, he's got that thing. I'm a man of the people, and he wears these really kind of crappy suits and comfy shoes. But here's the kicker, right? So as soon as they move in, him and his new wife, into this shack, she leaves him. Because, you know, most women don't like to live in a shack with a dirt floor. Yeah. This guy's an idiot. He can't keep a woman. All right. His first real job was registering people for food stamps, which I never understood. Let me digress for a minute, folks. You know, when you're sitting at home, well, I'll tell you, when I'm sitting at home and I'm watching TV and I'm doing show prep or whatever it is and flipping between all the news channels. And I'll tell you, folks, at the point in time when your host begins to yell at the television set. No, it's not Hillary Clinton. No, it's when an ad comes on for some public benefit. You know, when an ad comes on that tells you how to register for Obamacare. If it's such a damn good benefit out there that we needed, why are we advertising it to people? I mean, if people really wanted it so bad, why are we, you know how much that's costing the government to air that ad? We are spending money to encourage people to be dependent on the federal government, right? So this guy, Bernie, is basically that. He's a little distributor. He's like, hey, do you need food stamps? Yeah, here you go. Here's some food stamps. He is a welfare dealer. It's like a crack dealer. I mean, that's what he is. Crack. Yeah, crack keeps you down, doesn't it? Keeps you dependent. What else? I'll tell you, all of this was going on. You know, you think maybe this is before, you know, we were pretend it's 2020 now. And, you know, this is before we had universal free college education. So poor Bernie didn't get a leg up because he didn't go to college. Wrong. He graduated from the University of Chicago, which, for those of you from wherever, that's a pretty dang good school. OK, that's a great school. You go to the University of Chicago, you should be able to get a job. There's so much more. OK, when we come back, let's continue on this Bernie Sanders resume nonsense, because I'll tell you, this guy shouldn't be running for dog catcher. Can't make this stuff up, folks. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, on Talk Radio 790 KABC. When she was an American girl, raised on promises, she couldn't ever think. Money does not just get created out of thin air. You know, Bernie Sanders is the tooth fairy. That's what you guys think. You think you put your wish under your pillow and you wake up in the morning and there's money there. Well, guess where that money came from? And I know your kids are listening, so we're just going to agree to know what I'm talking about. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Folks, we were talking about Bernie Sanders' resume, and I'm somehow managing to make this sound interesting, and I want to tell you folks, I like point out that this is good radio. It's almost like Seinfeld, though. It's the show about nothing. Just to recap, basically he did nothing until he was 40. And what I didn't get into was that at 40, he got elected to the mayor of a town, Burlingame. Burlington? Is that where the Coke factory is? Is that Burlingame? Or is it Burlington? Oh, that's a different town. Well, clearly that town is way more significant than the one Bernie was mayor of. When he was mayor, there were 38,000 people in that town. Isn't that like two or three blocks in L.A.? I mean, for reals, what's 38,000 people? Doesn't Trump have more people working for him than were in that town? Okay, so let's stay focused on this because this is incredible, and this will come out, and the fact that it hasn't blows my mind because I got Missy and Lachey out there, and they're just shaking their heads. They're shaking their heads, right? And, well, tell me, you guys don't believe this, right? And what's funny about it, right, is that you haven't heard this stuff yet. And you're both reasonably, you know, aware people. Lachey, you're more of an E! Hollywood type, right? Where are you? No. Well, you're not a C-SPAN kind of girl. That's what I'm trying to get at. Fair enough. That's why you're so normal. I mean that in a nice way. So Bernie, he somehow gets into politics at 40, and that is the first time he has a steady paycheck. His entire concept, right, of what America is revolves around what it isn't. See, when you've got someone who's goes through their first 40 years of life. And when he was a kid, he lives in a 3.5 bedroom apartment in Brooklyn. His parents are immigrants. It's a rent controlled apartment. What does that mean? Well, yeah, you know, where the price is fixed by the government. And, you know, that's that whole, you know, don't even get me started about rent control, right? And how nonsense you can't put caps on prices in the marketplace. It completely skews supply and demand. It reduces supply and ultimately creates poverty because builders don't come in and invest in areas because they can't get the kind of return on their investment because the government is telling them they can only sell their product, their rent, for a fixed amount. And so these buildings, of course they start crumbling, right, Robbie, because, you know, there's not enough money. Well, because the price of paint didn't get fixed and the price of, you know, whatever, the price of plumbing and piping, all that stuff that you need to fix a building, that keeps going up. But rent control is pegged at a certain number. But Bernie Sanders grew up in a world as a kid where that was. He probably came home and said his dad would tell him, thank goodness for rent. Thank goodness if it wasn't for rent control, we wouldn't have a place to live. When basic simple economics have shown and proved that areas that are allowed to charge market rents, develop better, even for lower income people, because you've got now you've got a new development. That development comes in, it's not rent controlled. And what happens when you have more supply? Eventually prices go down. But anyway, I digress. Lives in a rent control apartment, but he does, like I said last segment, he does get to the University of Chicago. So he's a college graduate who doesn't land a real job until he's 40. So I don't know if he was on the 7-year plan, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he completed college at 22. So for the next 18 years, he did not a whole lot. Okay. And so he wins election after election and moves up. And in 2006, he gets elected to the Senate, which is actually not that long ago. I thought this guy had been in the Senate since the beginning of time. I mean, he's 76, isn't he? He's old. 73. So he gets elected fairly late in life. And what does he do this whole time through? Well, he's an agitator. He has always, one thing he's been is consistent. America is not the place it should be. It's not a good place because of evil corporations, rich people who aren't paying their fair share, and an exploitative environment that takes advantage of the working class. And this is his point. Now, what's interesting is that for as much as he likes to tear down other people, he is deeply private about his personal life. And I think you can get away with it when you run for Senate in a little tiny state like Vermont, where his opponent may or may not have been a moose. The greater problem is when you run for president of the United States and all of a sudden you've got, you know, world-class journalists begin to poke around. We remember this with Obama, who, by the way, I thought Obama was a lightweight. My gosh, Obama had an industrial resume compared to Bernie. So, yeah, Obama had a real job for, you know, like 12 months when he was 27. So, I mean, I think that qualifies him for something. So here's what's interesting. Anytime any journalist has tried to prod Sanders about his personal life, about the kid that he's had out of wedlock, about his accomplishments or, you know, lack thereof, whatever, he has always maintained that it's out of bounds. Out of bounds. And I don't think he can maintain that moving forward. I don't think he will. Will he become the nominee? No, it's possible. Anything's possible right now, guys. It is. Missy's nodding. So we're not going to relitigate the whole Hillary thing, but we know that her campaign's in trouble and she's facing this deluge from the FBI. And that may or may not go anywhere. But at any rate, it's a shadow that's going to follow her around. And it's also not an establishment year. And this is the headwind, folks. This is the headwind that all the establishment candidates are facing. I don't for a minute believe that. Well, I think, Robbie, you're gonna die when I tell you this. Yeah, I think Hillary is way more qualified to be president than Bernie Sanders. But she's the establishment candidate, and this year is not about the people that have hung around politics forever, which is ironic. I don't know how Bernie is exempted from that. But I guess the idea is he wasn't in the halls of power. You know, he wasn't Secretary of State. He wasn't, you know, First Lady. Although I don't think he'd make a very good First Lady either. okay. But who do the Republicans have that are the anti-establishment candidates? Well, it's Trump and Cruz. And Cruz, Let's talk about him first. He's a Harvard-educated lawyer who's had a pretty astounding career, is a phenomenally bright guy, has worked in the private sector, and then been elected to the Senate. What, he's still in his first term. But he's a fairly young guy, right? I mean, he's 20 years Bernie's junior, and he's already done more. And the other anti-establishment candidate is Trump, and whether you love him or hate him, you've got to acknowledge that while he's not been in an elected office before, he's an accomplished guy. He's built a company. He's hired and fired. And he has a good sense, I imagine, of how to run an organization. So the biggest organization that Bernie has ever run seems to me to be his Senate office, which is, by the way, folks, is staffed with, I mean, you know, these Senate offices are staffed with very few people. We're talking 12, maybe a few more. That's overstaffed, in my opinion. But what would you say, Rob? About 12, right? So you go from 12 to who knows how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of employees, right, that are directly responsible up the chain to the executive branch. All of Justice Department, State Department, Commerce, all of this. And on this thin of a resume? Well, what did he do in the Senate? Robbie, you know this, right? He co-sponsored three bills. He renamed one Vermont post office to the Thad Stevens Post Office. And he renamed a second Vermont post office to the Matthew Lyon Post Office Building. And then he got a cost of living adjustment for veterans. That is what he's done in the Senate since 2006. So that's where I'm going to circle back to what I started off with. Folks, if you are the nut that thinks that Bernie is the answer to all your problems, and I'm sorry. He is not going to have, he does not have the skills to accomplish the ability, he doesn't have the ability to accomplish half of what he's promising you. And that is how I am able to sleep at night. We'll round out with some other election analysis. But I gotta break down a couple things here for you that are interesting. And remember, today is a big day. We'll see how it goes. Sam Rojofsky, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. You know, if I had a dollar for every time that Rubio talked about Jesus in this campaign in Iowa, I could put a lot of money in that communion dish. And Sam Rojofsky, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And, okay. So one thing that I still have to say about Bernie before get on to some other stuff is, so I think it's Politico went and interviewed some of his friends from his early years. And his friends describe him as being, he was always poor. And they said that his electricity was turned off and he was messy, right? He's got a messy apartment. And that the only thing that he was really good at was talking. He talked a lot about quality of life in America and how, you know, everything in America is based on greed. And he would tell people all the time that he believes in the redistribution of wealth. Now, it is funny to me, I'll tell you folks, it's funny to me how seductive socialism is because, well, the fact is that when we talk about all these bumper stickers and these rallies, these people, I see it on Facebook, There's so many people that think that love this guy. And they love him. The only thing that they know about him, clearly, is his message. So there is something about his message that is resonating with people. And that, I think, is the most alarming thing to me. And I think it's because of my background. You know, my parents were both born in Czechoslovakia. Back then, it was still Czechoslovakia, so I can say that. Now it's the Czech Republic. They're both born in Prague. It's a beautiful city. And Czechoslovakia was at one point a very wealthy country. In fact, before World War II, Czechoslovakia was a far wealthier country than Germany. Its industry was more advanced, had a higher GDP, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the war happened, right? All that terrible stuff. Germany invaded. Czechoslovakia was split up, then reunited after the war. 3 years of peaceful years, and then was swallowed whole by the Soviet Union. And what followed then were 40 years of communist rule. And if you want to know what America in Bernie's fantasy land would look like, I can tell you. Because as a 10-year-old kid, I went back with my father, traveled to Prague about 2 months after the regime collapsed. And what I saw was a country exactly what it would look like after 40 years of a command economy. What do I mean? It means there's no Wall Street. There's no greed, quote unquote. The government decides what the cost of goods are. The government decides who gets what. The government distributes basically all the assets of the country. And follows, I mean, this ideology, Sanders, when he was younger, that's what all he read. He admits he's a disciple of Lenin, of Trotsky, of Marx. The founders of the Soviet Union and the progenitors of the ideology that destroyed my parents' country. There is nothing that sounds more seductive to a young, brainless twit of a person than sit back, relax, kid. The government's got you to take care of you and just get on the conveyor belt. Play your guitar. Draw your pictures. Do your thing. The government will take care of you. It is a much tougher sell to say, get off your ass, work hard, or else you're up creek with no paddle. Now, if you promise, and this is what happened, I'll give you, folks, a small glimpse of what happens when you don't have a market-driven economy. When you don't allow people to go after their greed. I'd go to a store. I remember what my first visit. I go to a store and the shelves were empty. And in the back of the store was what? I peer into the stock room and there'd be giant boxes of goods. Unpacked, not unpacked, right? Waiting just for what? Well, why would the storekeeper stock the shelves? She gets paid whether she does her job or not. The store isn't competing with another store because the government's decided where each store is. Right? And you have, and as a consumer, you walk into a store and there's nothing to buy. I mean, you've got plenty of money, right? Because you're guaranteed a job. Everybody's guaranteed a job. Everybody has money. But they walk into a store where they can't buy anything. What happens to an economy when the government redistributes wealth, takes money, confiscates assets from the people that are producing, and gives it to people that aren't producing? The answer is you take away the motivation of the people that are producing. I hate to break it to you, folks. I don't know a single Democrat that I know that goes to work and says, today and tomorrow and for the rest of the year, I am working for the good of this country. No, because at some level, they have goals. They want to buy a house. They want to buy a car. They want to go on a nice vacation. All reasonable things. But those aspirations of individuals, that's really important because those individuals are working hard towards those goals. And, you know, once you provide an economy where there is a universal cushion for everybody, I'm not even talking about the expense of it, which is you eventually just run out of money to pay for all of this. You also take away people's motivation. One of the motivations in life is fear, greed and fear. There has to be some element of fear in society that, oh, crap, I'm not going to make it. Oh, crap, I've got to work. Do you have kids? Anybody with kids right now, you know what I'm talking about. You can do everything for your kid. Hold their hand, help them with their homework. Do their homework for them, right? I mean, their parents would do that. And then what happens? Your kid is completely dependent on you. Well, we all know that we all have neighbors and friends with kids like that. They're total losers. Total failure to launch because they've always had someone holding their hand and doing stuff for them. You know kids that are in their 20s and that still get an allowance from their parents? Who's more successful, typically, on average? The kid who gets kicked out of the house at 18 says, now you're on your own, kid? Or the kid that has parental support indefinitely? Well, I tell you, I know the answer. And the thing is if this country stops kicking people in the ass from time to time and making them work hard to support themselves, we lose everything. We become a nation of dependent sissies. But that is the fantasy land that people on the left want. That is what they want. They want the government to be calling the shots because arguably the government is way more fair than Wall Street. Way more fair. Which is, of course, nonsense. Because you replace one elite with another. You don't think that in a command economy where the government is deciding anything, who becomes all powerful? The government. And the people that are in positions of power within the government are the elites. And they get their special privileges, just like Bernie does, right? He makes rules for companies. He says, oh, minimum wage should be $20 an hour. You know what he does? What does he pay his interns? Below minimum wage, $12 an hour. Because you know what? What's good for those guys? That's good for them. But I'm going to play by different rules. And that is the country that my parents grew up in. They grew up in a country where the government called the shots. The government made decisions for about everything. And the elites in that country, they were in the government and they lived like kings with little to no accountability. And if that's the kind of country that we want, I don't see it. I don't see it. But the thing is that so many kids don't get this. And it comes, this is why, in my opinion, Bernie Sanders is doing so well with kids is because I think there's so few kids that go to college. Can you imagine if everybody went to college like he wants, you know, everybody goes to college. What? I mean, so we just delay people adulting for another 4 years, right? I mean, it's the last thing that we need. But the reason that young people find socialism so enthralling and find Bernie Sanders so appealing is because they are afraid to get out in the real world. And this is, it's so seductive to be heard, to know that they're going to be taken care of, to hear that being promised to them. It's dangerous, and it stands to ruin us. Folks, we're out of time. Back next week, and we'll talk. We'll catch up. We'll see how the primary goes today. We're gonna have a lot of news this next week, and we'll have a special guest too. Sam Berjovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Hi, I'm James Bergener. Look, accidents happen. If you're in pain, you need to be proactive. Calling a lawyer isn't about going after the person who hit you. It's about dealing with an insurance company. The adjuster making decisions on your case isn't worried about treating you fairly. They're worried about one thing, money. An insurance company will never take care of you, but I will. Call me, Sweet James, at 1-800-881-2021. Or go to sweetjames.com.